And here's your prescription.
I know just the pharmacy to get this filled.
Who are you?
A pharmacy benefit manager. A middleman your insurer uses to decide which medicines you can get, what you pay, and sometimes even which pharmacy you should go to.
Why can't I go to a pharmacy in my neighborhood?
Because I make more money when you go to a pharmacy I own.
No one should stand between you and your medicine. Visit phrma.org/middleman to learn more. Paid for by Pharma.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex Kirshner, one of those weeks where you sit here, you look at the schedule, you say, not a good week, but something will happen. And I don't think a massive something happened, but this week was not without intrigue.
No, this week was fun. And, you know, you're kind of ahead of the curve, Richard, because I think everyone in the college football media has been somewhat taken aback, even though we anticipated it to a large degree, by all of the interest in Deion Sanders and in Colorado. And you messaged Godfrey and me a couple days ago, like, look, we're going to have to talk about Colorado next week. It's what the people want to hear. Like, it's the play that works right now. So let's call it. And I was like, well, I mean, they're going to be coming off a completely boring game against an overmatched rival, Colorado State. We're not going to learn anything about them. It doesn't matter. And then, well, maybe we didn't maybe learn anything about them, but somehow we're going to start the hurry up with Colorado again because, well, somehow they're the most fun college football team to watch in the entire country right now, for good and for ill, and mostly for good. It's kind of insane. I can't believe this is happening.
Timer on, 30-ish minutes, starts in 3, 2, 1. Colorado, 43. Colorado State, 35 in double overtime. Colorado drives 98 yards to tie the game at the end and send it into overtime. This was weird in the beginning. There were two turnover sixes. It was wonky in the beginning. The middle, I thought Colorado State really grabbed this game by the scruff of the neck. And then the end, Colorado storms back, resiliency, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Shedeur Sanders actually, Richard, led really longer than a 98-yard drive. It was really like closer to 110, 120, because Colorado kept going backwards on procedure penalties in the last drive. Like, he had to drive more than the length of the field because they weren't getting lined up right. And they were false starting and things. I forget the specific procedures, but there were two on the last drive. He's big time. Like, he's just a seer. I mean, he takes bad sacks and he's working behind kind of a paper mache offensive line. But this
he takes
is
some horrific sacks.
This is a serious, serious player. Like, one of the best QBs in FBS in his first year up from FCS. He's really serious. But okay, Richard is. Okay, we'll see.
I'm not telling you Shedeur Sanders is a bad player. I think the first round draft pick stuff may be a little.
Okay. Anyway, so what catches my eye from this game is that only a few short days ago, Colorado State's head coach, Jay Norvell, essentially tries to call Deion a thug by saying that you take off your sunglasses and your hat when you talk to adults. And then, because that's what his mom taught him to do. And then Colorado State takes 15 fucking penalties for 167 fucking yards, including multiple ridiculous, unnecessary personal fouls that made it look like they were trying to get a Miami 30 for 30 doc produced about them. Like, come on. In addition to other examples of undisciplined and poor play by Colorado State. Like, what a terrible situation. Coach so badly in this game.
Colorado State, I will say this. I don't really want to hear the, like, oh, Jay Norvell was, like, sending a message to his team. First and foremost, love trash talk. Have absolutely no problem with trash talk. Every single coach should talk shit about their opponent every single week. It makes it really fun. But, like, I don't really get the 4D chess. He was sending a message to his team when the guy preaching respectability politics, had his team go out there and cheap shot Travis Hunter. That was ridiculous, by the way. That hit was uncalled for, unbelievable. You mentioned all the penalties and all the procedural penalties. It's why they lost the game.
Yeah.
In the first overtime, they basically gave Colorado the first touchdown in the first overtime. I was stunned, by the way, with how Colorado State managed this game at the end of it, particularly. I thought they managed it poorly. I did not think they played to win. I was shocked that they didn't go for it for two in the first overtime after they scored. Just put it on the table, man. Go for the win. Go for the jugular. I thought it was a mixed message of like, oh, you know, we do the things the right way and we're not scared of this team and all that kind of stuff. But then they ended up, in my opinion, playing scared at the end.
Yeah, there were more game management, more coaching issues for Colorado State here. Jay Norvell is a receivers coach. That's how he came up. That's his expertise. It's what he does. Colorado State had numerous instances in this game, but one especially bad one at the end of regulation after Colorado tied it, where it's like third and medium and a receiver catches the ball and has plenty of room to go and get a first down and two more first downs. You might kick a field goal. You might win this game. You had plenty of time. And instead of turning a field, he runs to the sideline and gets nothing. And it ends the threat for Colorado State. Like, why are your receivers in a program that is run by a receivers coach not getting upfield when they get the ball?
That's what I talk about when I say like the end of the game management there was odd, because were you going for the jugular there? What, like, if you just were trying to run the clock out, just kneel it out and go to overtime. It was odd.
And then
and then at the end of the game, obviously, like, and this is why I thought it was obviously awesome, is like end of the game, like The Rock is in the locker room. Deion's mother is in the locker room because obviously Jay Norvell put this entire situation on a tee for them. That's fine. I, again, love trash talk, want every coach to trash talk every single week in every single press conference. But like, they didn't pay it off. Not even just because they didn't win, because I didn't think they like played to the message that it seemed like Jay Norvell was trying to get across.
No, it was badly coached. Like, I generally speaking, like, you want to praise a coaching staff that almost mounts a pretty significant upset, but it was a badly coached game. Also, I have no clue, like, at all what their plan was on defense in the second overtime when they just wouldn't send anybody after Shadur.
Well, they did that the whole, that was like the whole fourth quarter, by the way.
Then,
like, they were playing lock, stock, barrel, like cover two, like sit back, all that kind of stuff. And Shadur, that's when Shadur finally got in a rhythm, when they started picking at the middle of the field.
Dude, but then on the play that leads to the touchdown play, they sent seven guys. And there's no,
try to heat him up.
I understand, but like, it was just, there was nobody there to cover the tight end standing alone in the end. It just, whatever the plan was, it didn't work. And curious in a lot of respects by Jay Norvell and Colorado State. Elsewhere, Fresno State 29, Arizona State nothing. So the Mountain West does get one over on the Pac-12, Big 12 in this game. Mikey Keene, Richard, formerly of UCF. Another one for Jeff Tedford. Like, this guy is just good at finding these guys. Jalen Gill got a 42-yard touchdown from Keene in this game, where he shook the guy covering him on what was one of the few bad throws by Mikey Keene. Gill was a top 100 recruit in like 2018 for Ohio State. Sixth-year college player, third stop, who's at Boston College. Good to see. Fresno might win the Mountain West this year.
Arizona State had 7 turnovers. You're never going to win a game with 7 turnovers. Oregon State 26, San Diego State 9. Good teams don't stub toes. Oregon State did not stub their toe.
The air is out of the balloon for San Diego State. I think that they are over as what they have been, and they need to find something that's exciting, and I don't think Brady Hoke is going to find it. Sac State 30, Stanford 23. The Sacramento State Hornets get a 10-point FCS upset draft win against their former coach, who is in his third or fourth game after leaving them to go to Palo Alto. An FCS victory that is packed with narrative. Kudos to Jason Kirk. He picked it.
They put it over the top, I think, with a turnover there at the end. The game was tied. Stanford turned it over, I think, and Sac State ran all the way back to the house. Not what you want. Not what you want from Stanford. What you do want is Mizzou 30, K-State 27.
Quick note. I think Sac State had to run an offensive play on a catch and run on a third down to actually take the lead in that game. But yes, Stanford gave them the opportunity to do that.
Yes. Missouri 30, K-State 27. This game was an absolute belter. Like 100% box office. Just the entire game. Like absolute slugfest in this game in like the good way.
Fantastic stuff. Let's talk about the end. The entire game was great. Oh boy. But the ending.
Like incredible.
Astonishing. So, I mean, Missouri is out of timeouts. The game is tied at 27, but they are taking advantage of the clock stopping on first downs, which it still does in the final minutes of the half.
The last 2 minutes.
Yeah. Brady Cook played tough in this game. He played very, very tough. He had been hurt near the end of the first half, stays in this game. He completes like a 9-yard ball on third down to Theo Weiss with like 6 seconds left. The ball's at the 39, tie game. You got a pretty makeable 56-yard kick. All you got to do is run your field goal team out there, and they've got, you know, 35 seconds or so to do that after the play ends and things get settled because of the play clock, the 40-second play clock in college football. But for some unknown reason, Missouri like goes into like a team meeting, like they go and they stop and they're
acted chatting. Like they were in a timeout. Like that's they, what, like they, yeah. They all were like in a timeout versus, you know, trying to get the special teams on the field.
They clearly thought that the game had been stopped, but it hadn't been. And why would it? Like, why would Kansas State assist them with this? They don't realize until they're in the final 10 seconds of the play clock and the wrong guys are on the field that they do not have time to do whatever it is that they thought they were going to do.
Not even on the field, Alex. They were in a veritable huddle.
It's crazy.
And then Drinkwitz like runs into it and is like, guys, go. And then like the offense like runs out there. It was like unbelievable. So, you know, it's funny that you call it a makeable 56-yard field goal because you are right. Harrison Mevis has an absolute cannon for a right, like obviously, and weirdly gets better the farther back you place him.
Yeah.
You will recall the Auburn game last year, for instance, gets better the farther back you place him. So Missouri takes a delay of game penalty here, and it's now a 61-yard field goal. The funny thing is, like, I was like, oh, I guess Missouri is just going to end up throwing a Hail Mary here because they're out of, you know, reasonable field goal range. And then Mevis comes in. And if you want to call me hyperbolic on this, that's fine. This is one of the greatest field goals I've ever seen. I think it is the greatest field goal I've ever seen.
It's amazing.
He hits a 61-yarder, the longest field goal in SEC history, second longest in Missouri football history, as time expired, and it's not at altitude, and it would have been good from 65, if not more, in my opinion.
He completely flushed it. It was amazing. If they had lost this game, fire Drinkwitz on the field for what happens at the end of the game. I mean, like, astonishing. Like, you might never see this. Just incredible that this was allowed to happen. And it's a complete bailout by Harrison Mevis. What you have to give Drinkwitz is that he has some guys on this team. Their receiver group at Mizzou is, like, maybe other than Tennessee, the best in the entire SEC this year.
I don't think Tennessee is the best in the SEC. We'll get to that in a second.
Maybe might be the best. I mean, Luther Burden is the ringleader of this group, but Theo Weiss Jr., formerly of Oklahoma, had a really good game here as well. They had a couple other targets who were actively involved throughout the game for Brady Cook. Mizzou is intriguing. They're intriguing. Not entirely in a good way, but this was a great game. And it was a lot of fun to watch. Tough L for Kansas State. Florida 29, Richard, Tennessee 16.
That's right. One more on Missouri, by the way, or Missouri, Kansas State before we move. Chris Klieman's doing the two quarterback thing again with like a running quarterback. Just the man is an absolute sicko in the best way with how Kansas State runs on offense. Will Howard was like hurt in this game too. They're still flexing him out to wide receiver and wasting him so the backup can come in and run. Whatever. Florida 29, Tennessee 16. Fantastic. That is executing a phenomenally complimentary football game script. Florida came in this game and said, we're just going to, as best we can, not allow Tennessee to have the ball. Tennessee's going to score quick. Everybody knows Tennessee's going to score quickly. They're going to score. Why would we give them more opportunities to score? Florida executed the Wisconsin South blueprint that I've been joking about all summer. They came in and ran the hell out of the ball. They pretty much misdirectioned on like almost every play, it seemed like, particularly for the first three quarters. Tennessee's front on defense was flying around, really aggressive. And I think Florida was able to neutralize that because they just kept sending guys in motion. There were some tap passes in there. And then they started getting the counter running with Trevor Etienne and Montrell Johnson. I owe a lot of happiness in my life to Mrs. Donetta Etienne and Mr. Travis Etienne Sr. Tennessee on offense, not what you want, really. I think that Tennessee's wide receiver core is not what it was last year. It's quite clear. And Joe Milton is not Hendon Hook.
Most of this game. The pick that he threw, the one, you know, the one, was fair caught by a Florida
defense. Yes, it was. Yeah. It was. Joe Milton in this game. Look, we've talked about this since he was at Michigan. What happens when Joe Milton's not throwing the ball 50 yards down the field? There is going to be a time, I'm sure, where they're going to hit those deep balls, you know, at an advanced rate, and they're going to blitz somebody out of the building. But when they're not, he is mid when he is not throwing the ball 50 yards down the field. It is clear. ESPN had a stat last night. He has never thrown a touchdown on the run outside of the pocket. There's timing stuff. He's throwing behind guys. It's like when he's not able to rip it, when he's not able to like throw it 50 yards down the field, it's like, oh, now I have to play real quarterback. And like it changes. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of consternation on the Tennessee side in Knoxville because of how this game went. They need Cooper Mays back at center, by the way, like yesterday, because Tennessee had a bevy of procedural penalties in this game as well. There were a couple questionable calls. The illegal blindside block in the second half was a ridiculous call. I will give Tennessee fans that. Yes, there were some misholdings. I understand that. But Florida, with 7 minutes left in the game, comes out in minus territory on around the minus 35 on like 4th and 5. And you know they are trying to get you to jump, and Tennessee jumps in the neutral zone, and Florida is able to really squeeze out the game and choke the game at the end. And that's ridiculous. And also, Josh Heupel calling a timeout with 7 seconds left in this game when the game is clearly over. Florida then kneels it, and the Tennessee player takes a little shot at Graham Mertz there. That's unbelievable. That's ridiculous. And that's on Josh Heupel. You know that game is over. Enough is enough. And there's now the visual of Joe Milton like actually squaring up with a Florida offensive lineman at the end about to throw some hands. Florida, Tennessee is back. Georgia 24, South Carolina 14. South Carolina comes out of or comes into this game and, all right, doing some stuff here. It's quite clear South Carolina wants no part of trying to run the ball on Georgia. They come out and it's just side to side. It's screens. It's horizontal. Eventually, Georgia catches up to that. That stopped working. Spencer Rattler's fighting for his life on the back end again for the second year in a row against Georgia. And the Dogs asserted themselves.
Yeah, Dow Loggins for South Carolina, the offensive coordinator, was strike breaking, the writer's strike, because he had a good script that he wrote for the first drive of this game. But then you get a little bit deeper here and the realities of the two teams, also Juice Wells' injury, these things set in. And South Carolina scored no points after halftime, and it was not very much in doubt by the end of the game. LSU 41, Mississippi State 14, just a complete thrashing. Malik Nabers was at like 9 and 150 at halftime. With time to go, actually, in the first half. I didn't even bother to look what he finished with. Like, this was as lopsided as non-Vanderbilt SEC games get.
Mississippi State was like, I mean, it's a team in transition. They are absolutely, obviously transitioning from air raid to something that's a little bit more defense run game focused. The bad part was they couldn't play defense in this game, particularly on the back end. You know, look, this is an LSU thing. Maybe they lost in week one. They're going to get better over the course of the season. I'm not surprised that LSU looked not just capable, not just competent, the far better team in this game, obviously. Alabama 17, USF 3. Citrus Bowl defense good. I just, the Alabama thing is, the quarterback thing is rough. Like I'm in retrospect, I'm like, you probably should have played Milroe, because they and Saban said, I think coming out of halftime, that Milroe played like the third best of the quarterbacks in practice this week. And I think that's why they ended up kind of putting Ty Simpson in and not Milroe when they switched quarterbacks in the second half. USF, all credit to them, you know, on defense, played their hearts out here, like zero blitzing Alabama in the red zone, which is its own commentary about what Alabama doesn't have with pass catchers. Obviously, Alabama eventually is able to kind of bend, break them on defense and is able to kind of run over them at the very end there. But the quarterback play is terrible right now for Alabama.
Ole Miss 48, Georgia Tech 23. Ole Miss not deterred by drama this week around Lane Kiffin, who is calling a player one of those words you can't say at work, according to a transcript where he is firing the player, basically in his words. This is a total mismatch. Jackson Dart running was the big thing here, but also Dart and Jordan Watkins together throwing it a few times. Ole Miss offense is one of the best in all the land again, and is going to be a handful all year. Also, I am wondering, Richard, if this may not be the year that Ole Miss's defense holds up against the Alabama Crimson Tide. I'm wondering.
We'll see. BYU 38, Arkansas 31. I don't think BYU is very good, but they did win this game.
Well, it's funny. They scored 38, but they scored 38 with the assist of Arkansas and a couple of short fields in particular. They had a one play 20-yard touchdown drive after a pick. They had a drive that went nowhere but resulted in a field goal because they had taken over in plus territory. When you win games by seven, those things are standouts. They are noticeable. Arkansas assisted BYU in this W for sure.
Speaking of assisting in a W, Florida State 31, Boston College 29, 18 Boston College penalties in this game, including I think it was a face mask at the very end of the game when Boston College could have conceivably gotten the ball back and driven to try to win this game.
Would have gotten the ball back.
Yeah, they'd stopped them on third down, I think.
Yes.
And Boston College could have come back and won that game. Florida State, I think, was a little shaky. Obviously, you see the scoring margin and you're like, all right. You know, for Boston College, it's almost 40 penalties in three games. They came in and I think there were like three or four teams in the country that had played two games coming into this weekend that had more total penalties than Boston College. That's coaching. You have a Boston College outfit that is now lost to a Northern Illinois team that they need absolute heroics to even get into overtime, beat an FCS team last week in which a weather delay stymied any momentum that FCS team had because that FCS team got the ball back with the chance to drive and win. And then Boston College, yes, did battle, scrap, and claw in this game, but the penalties mean you're not winning. And I know Jordan Travis got a little nicked up in this game, ended up coming back and was able to kind of finish out here, but this is a Boston College thing, man.
Yeah, look, it's hard for a team like BC to threaten a team like FSU and for the game to end and you still think, wow, like not very encouraging. And yet they did it. Maybe that's bending to a narrative that's in my head, but the undisciplined play was acute in this game for BC. Clemson 48, FAU 14, whatever for Clemson, but they are going to be home underdogs for sure against Florida State. Casey Thompson got hurt for FAU, by the way. Sounded serious. Sucks.
North Carolina 31, Minnesota 13. Weird non-con. Friend of the show, Nate Tice, likes to call Drake May passes javelins. He had a few javelins in this game. Drake May is just outstanding.
Yeah, Minnesota is missing Tanner Morgan quite a bit. Ethan Kaliakmanis, the new quarterback there, is just not yet. We're a quarter of the way through the season. It's a small sample size sport. He is not there yet to be a useful Power 5 quarterback. And you know, you appreciate that comfortable sweatshirt that you had. It's actually not a segue into the ad read, but it could be. And that was what Tanner Morgan was for Minnesota. They're struggling game plan wise, 6 yards on 2 catches on 5 targets for their best player, Brevin Spanford.
North Carolina might be good on defense.
Could be the second best team in the ACC. I don't know. We're seeing. Might. We don't know. Notre Dame 41, Central Michigan 17. This was the Peacock game. Notre Dame fans sounded really worried throughout it. It was closer than it wound up being, I guess, but I'm not making conclusions here.
Duke 38, Northwestern 14. Northwestern's terrible. Duke, soft defense at the end, blew an absolute... We had the under in our hands, is what I'm trying to say. Tough. And Duke's defense comes out playing absolutely soft, and Northwestern scores at the end. Ridiculous. Wake 27, Old Dominion 24. Wake came back in this game and got it done.
Wake was down 17-0 at half in this game. Might have been 17-3. It was a lot. It was 14 or 17. Wake had been on the business end of two defensive touchdowns, each of which went most of the field the other way. So we're like 10 to 14 point swings each time. Lamarion James, the same player for ODU, had both of these scoop and score, pick and score plays. And ultimately, Wake just overwhelmed them in the end. Kind of incredible that ODU did not pull off another ACC upset here, given the two defensive scores and that they had a receiver, Javon Harvey, who in the first half alone, in a 15-minute period, had catches of 57, 68 for a touchdown, and 41. So that's 166 yards on three catches within 15 minutes in the first half. And you get two defensive touchdowns, and you don't win the game. Brutal. I mean, that's ODU, people. That's brutal. We feel for you. Just hard to take.
Quick ad break from our friends at Homefield Apparel. Homefield Apparel, SCD20 is the promo code to use. 20% off of your first order at homefieldapparel.com. New things all the time from our friends at Homefield, including an Indianapolis Colts collection, which it's funny, Alex, because they launched the Indianapolis Colts collection right before week one of the NFL season. And then the Colts go out and lose to those Jacksonville Jaguars at home, 31-21. Embarrassing result for the Colts, I must say. Go Jags. Chiefs in town today. Big one in Jacksonville. Lock down the bank, my Jags fans, friends. Penn State 30, Illinois 13.
They're going to be thrilled with that. They're going to love that ad read, Richard. Amazing business by you.
It's Jim Irsay's fault, not mine. Don't alienate your best franchise player. Penn State 30, Illinois 13. Illinois' defensive line, particularly Jerjon Newton, standing on his head in this game. But turnovers, if you give Penn State that many cracks at the apple, they are going to end up eating it.
I believe it was five turnovers that Illinois provided Penn State with. Also missed field goal. Just didn't do the things that you have to do. Washington a lot. Michigan State very few. Washington is the most fun offense to watch in the country. Period. They're amazing.
It's not particularly close.
It's not particularly close. And for the record, go ahead.
You can watch football for a long time and probably not see a better deep passing display than what they did yesterday. That was insane for Michael Penix.
That is an NFL quarterback, and that is three different NFL receivers catching passes from him. All of them great in college football. As I start to say the sentence, I know I'm going to get harassed for this. It's 2019 LSU-ish. It's not that. No one's saying it's that. Right. I said ish.
Relax.
Ish. Closest thing that we might have seen since that time. That's all that I'm saying. LSU fans, stop. You're thinking about sending me a mean email right now? Stop. I understand that your season was in 2019.
They're about to send you more than that. Louisville check the P.O. box. Louisville 21, Indiana 14. Louisville 21 skunk at one point in time in this game. Then Indiana comes back and has a chance to win the game.
Sure did. And that chance to end the game went up in smoke on fourth in the game, short yardage down at the end zone. Indiana called a timeout. They dialed up a play. It was a slow developing kind of delayed handoff that got completely stuffed. Why God does this to Indiana football, I'll never know, but it was rough. It was rough.
I think this is pretty clear evidence that there is no God. Nebraska 35, Northern Illinois 11. Nebraska bounce back game here. Jeff Sims benched. We kind of knew that was happening. Heinrich Herberg comes in this game. They manage it and they're able to get it done. This is what you're supposed to do. I think lesser Nebraska teams like last week may sort of send it to a death spiral kind of thing, but that did not happen here. I think it's really good for Nebraska to bounce back in this game and win it the way that they did. Wisconsin 35, Georgia Southern 14. Wisconsin. We're trying to get too cute. We're doing a lot of trying to get too cute.
They might have problems. You can kind of see the evolution with Phil Longo and that offense in real time. Like, they're trying to throw back shoulder fades down the field, but the intended target is a backup tight end wearing the number 38. You just don't quite have it yet. They did wind up cruising in this game, and they ran the ball well in the second half. But
Georgia Southern threw five picks and had a sixth turnover.
Yes, one quarterback, Davis Brin, threw them the ball five different times and dropped a snap that was right at his face, and they took the ball that way. Like, I'm starting to think it might be an Iowa year in the Big Ten West. I don't know. Iowa 41, Western Michigan 10. Richard, care to update us on the thing that you are tracking this season?
Iowa scores 41 points in this game. They are up to 28.3 points per game. For those wondering at home, if you don't think they are well aware of the thing, they were throwing the ball on the last drive of the game.
Oh my God.
Rutgers.
Yeah. Brian said, it's not, I checked. He was like, it's not going to change how we approach the game.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, it did.
Okay. You do
the
this
backup
a lot.
Quarterback. Yeah. The backup quarterback's in the game for Iowa throwing the ball on the last drive of the game. You know.
Rutgers 35, Virginia Tech 19. Virginia Tech, no Grant Wells, and they're a disaster. It's really bad. But instead of focusing on that, Rutgers, they are 3-0. They are a bowl possibility, which I did not expect.
I look out of my apartment, Alex. They're in the streets celebrating. Rutgers football, New York's Big Ten team.
Good running back performance here. Kyle Monongai, 8.9 per attempt for 143 and 3 touchdowns. Kurt Chiraka is back as the offensive coordinator here. Remember that they fired their OC last year, Sean Gleason. He was interim replaced with Nunzio Campanile, the most Rutgers man in the world, other than Shiano, quite possibly. They have Kirk back in this job, and things are trending positively. They play Michigan next week, so that's going to be interrupted, but whatever. Syracuse 35, Purdue 20. Aronde Gadsden, one of Syracuse's best players, wide receiver, out for the year. Huge blow. So what do they do in this game? They have Garrett Schrader run for like 204 touchdowns. That's coaching. That's game planning. That's leaning on your strengths if you're Syracuse.
Michigan a lot. Bowling Green, not that much. I have a blanket rule about Michigan this season, and I will be assigning no opinion as to their competency beyond they are obviously very good until the Penn State game. It's just 8 weeks of nothing. 8 weeks of nobody.
Certainly at least four. That's 30 minutes, and we go overtime yet again a comfortable margin. For Michigan, I don't care about the couple of J.J. McCarthy picks, just like I didn't really care about the last two weeks.
They weren't good picks.
Well, okay, but I didn't really care about the NFL draft people going gaga over him the first 2 weeks either. It's like, let's see. Let's just see. They're not playing like competition. It doesn't matter. Ohio State 63, Western Kentucky 10. The only thing I was watching here was the 10 for Western Kentucky. That's a low number for a top 40 offense in the country. It's what you want.
You wanted the 63, too. You were saying the last 2 weeks that you needed to see the sixth gear from them. And you got it in this game.
Yeah, it was good. Encouraging. Definitely an encouraging day for Ohio State. Maryland 42, UVA 14. Maryland keeps falling down 14-0 and then winning by a lot against bad teams. So well done to my alma mater, the Terps.
Your other alma mater, your spiritual alma mater, West Virginia 17, Pitt 6. Talk to me.
So we did the philosophical thing with Pat Narduzzi last week. I think that's true. I think the way he runs his offense is a problem. But you bring in a quarterback like this and it doesn't matter what your philosophy is. Phil Jurkovec, I do not understand the regression. What's happened here? He has the same OC that he had in 2020 at Boston College.
You mean he doesn't have Zay Flowers?
That might be it. I don't know. It's bad, man. He's not a playable FBS quarterback, and Pat won't make the change. And so Pitt cannot move the ball at all. But on the WVU side of it, even if a team is in total shambles offensively, you keep them to six. That's pretty good. It was a nice performance by West Virginia. Their quarterback, Garrett Green, got hurt on the second series. Nico Marshall came in and managed. Wasn't great, but, against this Pitt offense, he was the best quarterback on the field. And it's a huge win for Neil Brown. It creates an opening for him to not get fired. So good for him. Great win for West Virginia.
Texas 31, Wyoming 10. Lesser Texas teams lose this game. Struggled for like 3.5 quarters with this Wyoming team. Very, very salty. And then eventually the dam breaks. Screen pass to Xavier, where they need a pick six, put the game out of reach for Texas, and Texas is able to win the ball game.
Yeah, TCU 36, Houston 13.
I think Houston might be bad.
I think that might be the worst. I think I'm going to worst team in the Big 12 with Houston. This is not the way they wanted to enter this league. The crowd was very small. It's hard to get butts in seats when you're in a major market sometimes. Doesn't help that you just lost to Rice. They weren't competitive in this game. They are bad. I do not think anyone can be happy once again in this marriage with Dana and Houston. It's not going well.
Speaking of bad, is this the most shocking result of the season? South Alabama 33, Oklahoma State 7. We understand South Alabama is good, competent defense, really good. Kane Womack, great coach, dude.
But 33-7.
Come on. Come on.
No, it's all absolutely. It's the appropriate qualifier about how good South Alabama is, but you can't lose 33-7 to a Sun Belt team, even a good one.
You probably Oklahoma State probably can't lose 33-7 to like a not Oklahoma Big 12 team. You know what I'm saying? No. So
I asked on Twitter after this game, Oklahoma State people, is this the low point for Mike Gundy in Stillwater? And the consensus was that outside of losing every year to Oklahoma, often in critical spots, and outside of the time that he caused his best player to threaten to quit the team because he wore a t-shirt for a white supremacist television channel, this is the low point, aside from those, for Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. It's bad. I don't know what they're going to do about it. We talked about this on the Patreon show that we ran last week. There's not one reason that jumps out as to why Oklahoma State is in the state, but
there is one. And it's they have yet to
three QBs. They currently play three, one of whom is Mike Gundy's blood. By the way, it's not working. It's bad. They're one of the worst teams in the Big 12. They are not positioned to be good in the newer version of this conference. Miami of Ohio 31, Cincinnati 24. This is a rivalry game. Cincinnati had won 16 in a row. Miami's last win in this series was a year after Ben Roethlisberger left. Their last era of success in this rivalry was the Ben Roethlisberger, Terry Heppner era at Miami. Great stuff. Good for the Redhawks. Brett Gabbert cleared 10 yards per throw. I think he's legitimately good. Excited for him. Excited for Miami fans. Hope we have some Miami mergers coming out of this. Who's to say? Ohio 10, Iowa State 7. Yikes, bro. Yikes.
Curtis Rourke is still not like a clearly 100%. Obviously, he scored 7 points, or they scored 10 points. At the very end, though, tip drill pick, like one of those, like bounces off a guy and a big fella ends up catching it. And then as good a clock management execution to end the game as you will ever see. They got the final, the penultimate play finished with exactly 39 seconds left on the clock. And then they win the game. And then Matt Campbell like had to be held back for like kind of like getting in a fan's face.
Well, he didn't get that far because he was held back before he got there. But yeah,
the intent was there.
Guy yells at Campbell, says, "You're on the hot seat." Matt Campbell doesn't like that. He comes like he's trying to get in the guy's grill, talk to him pretty close. He is held back. Pretty funny video. You should go and find it. Not a sign that things are going very well for Iowa State. Oklahoma, many. Tulsa, few. Jeff Lebby coaching like a guy who was told to get to work this week and to stop embarrassing his bosses and just call plays so that they can remember why they made the moral compromise of hiring him in the first place. It was that kind of game.
James Madison 16, Troy 14. Troy's defense back. Troy's offense also, unfortunately, back.
Dude, Troy had a chance on the last drive to win this game by a point. They got beat up by an intentional grounding that took them from like the edge of field goal range to the edgier edge of field goal range. They went for it on fourth and long, didn't get it. Tough way to go down. But good news for Troy is that the NCAA will still let you win the Sun Belt this year if you win enough games. James Madison, not so fortunate. At 43, ECU 28 in Boone. A second half overwhelming by the Nears here after they were down a few at the break. Nate Noll for App State, one of the best running backs in the country. Watch him, watch him, watch him. 26 for $178 in this game. Richard, Georgia State 41, Charlotte 25. You want to tell everyone about Biff Poggi's legendary turn at the mic after this game?
My man, you want to talk about cutting a promo, Deion Sanders. Biff Poggi is going to cut a daggone promo. Biff Poggi,
excuse me, I'm mispronouncing his name. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah. He sort of was going on this thing, this falls on me. I'm telling you right now, I'm on a war path. I just met with our coaches and we're going to get it done the way I want it done, or either I'm not going to be here or they're not going to be here. I am not doing this for the rest of the season. You will note they play the Fighting Florida Gators next weekend.
Yeah, Louisiana, that's via 41. Hunter Bailey of the Charlotte Observer. Thank you for transcribing that fantastic bit of biffery.
Louisiana 41, UAB 21. UAB's terrible.
UAB's terrible. All the stuff that didn't happen with actual Deion is happening with UAB's Deion knockoff. Like, they look awful. Like, it's bad. It's bad. Higher continues to look curious. UNLV 40, Vanderbilt 37. Told him, Richard, in the Mountain West preview, intriguing team, UNLV. Doug Brumfield, the good quarterback, gets hurt early first quarter of this game. Jaden Mayava, the backup, comes in and they score 40 points against what is technically an SEC defense. A very good effort at home for UNLV. They got help from four turnovers from Vandy and were able to cash in enough of them. Vandy had a short field goal, 33 yarder to go ahead, about a minute left in this game. They missed it. UNLV drove quickly to win it on their own 36-yard field goal by Jose Pisano. Here's something fun. Jose is a former All-American in FCS at Missouri State, coached at the time by one Bobby Petrino. Petrino, of course, was UNLV's offensive coordinator for like 5 minutes this offseason. During his time there, he brought this kicker, Jose Pisano, over from Missouri State. I asked Jose about this postgame, asked him in the Twitter DMs, hey, just want to make sure I have this right. Did Bobby bring you over before he left? Said, yes, I can't thank Coach Petrino enough for giving me the chance to come to UNLV. Goes to show, Richard, that A, people will still respond to your Twitter DMs if you ask them nicely, and B, that even Bobby Petrino has players who are grateful for the things he's done for them, and UNLV probably is too. Great win.
New Mexico State 27, New Mexico 17. Nasty rivalry, but New Mexico gets it done. State gets it done.
Yes, New Mexico State gets it done. UNM's offense is Sisyphean, or however you say it.
Sisyphean.
Thank you. Sisyphean. It's bad. It has not improved the way that you would have hoped that it would improve with Dylan Hopkins and Brian Vincent coming in from UAB. FIU 24, UConn 17. FIU's 3-1. A bowl is possible. Stretch outcome, but possible. For UConn, it is not. They are 0-3. They are staring down games with like Rice and USF that look harder than they looked before the year. Not going to be a repeat of last year's happy story in stores.
North Texas 40, Louisiana Tech 37. Eric Morris's first win as head coach. They're up 23 points.
Up 23 and they're up more. They're up like, I think 26 or something on that effect. Cause they gave up 23 in the fourth quarter and still managed to hang on to win this game. On the weeknight games, all three academies played, Memphis 28, Navy 24. Navy not in a good spot. We are in wait-and-see mode with Memphis, which looked clunky in this game and could have lost to a pretty bad Navy team. But they have a good running back again, Blake Watson, very, very good. Watch him. Army 37, UTSA 29. Richard, all the stuff you told us about Army's offense, it is true. They are different now.
By God, two 100-plus rushers and a 100-plus yard passer in this game. 6 of 6 on fourth down, you will note. On fourth down, 44 minutes of time of possession and only 2 snaps under center, in which sources tell me it was the victory formation at the end of the game. Obviously, UTSA is a good football team, a very athletic football team, but they ran into a better football team on Friday night.
Frank Harris didn't play. He hadn't looked right the first couple of years. Hope he gets healthy and UTSA can make more of a run as they get into the American. Air Force 39, Utah State 21. Utah State still doesn't have it. Still does not have it under Blake Anderson for a second year in a row. We'll see where that leads. Richard, you got one on here to close us out that is Portland State 91, North American 0. That sounds like an NHL All-Star team from like 2005.
North American is an NAIA team. Alex, for the audience, that's not Division II. That's not Division III. That's NAIA. I am not entirely sure how this game got scheduled. And yet, last week, Portland State.
Where is North American based quickly?
I have absolutely no idea.
On the continent, I'm imagining. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I have absolutely no idea. Portland State lost 81-7 to Oregon last weekend and then came out and did this. They scored on their first 11 possessions of the game. Then they added a pick six and a punt return. They did not score in the fourth quarter. They scored 42 points in the second quarter. Portland State also, by the way, has the FCS record for points with a 105-0 win. That was back in 1980. They frankly got quite close to doing that in this game.
North American University is a private university in Stafford, Texas. NIU offers bachelor's and master's degree programs in business administration, criminal justice, computer science, and education. The more you know. Used to be called Texas Gulf Institute. This is, you know, sometimes you learn about schools you didn't know about. Curious that game happened. Richard, curious that the hurry up took 45 minutes today, but that's life.
Yeah, not curious. By the way, as for the uninitiated, as the season goes on, we transition into a play your way on to the hurry up cadence and tenor. We are not there yet.